Welcome to the show. Oh my goodness, another week has passed. Holy cow, we're at it again. If you missed last week, we had a wonderful guest, the founder of Gays Against Guns, joined us. We talked about the recent school shooting, and it was a really fascinating episode, and he had some great things to say. Jay Walker was his name, and but this week, holy cow, we've got a powerhouse guest representing the 2nd Congressional District, which is Madison, the home of civic media, as we are on civic media, home of civic media, Madison, the surrounding area, Congressman Mark Pocan. What's going on?
Not much, Mark.
No? you and I have to tell you, we have connections that I don't know if you know this, but my older brother, John Becker, knows you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I asked him, I said, if I drop your name to him, is he going to know? And he said, I don't know. He deals with so many people. But he worked with you while you were in the assembly, and John was doing LGBTQ advocacy for Fair Wisconsin when he got to know you. And then he sent me a text picture of you and him at the Israeli embassy during their pride celebration.
Yeah, because he's out this way, and I run into him occasionally, not too often, but, you know, generally I'm within a couple blocks of where I'm operating when I'm in D.C. So.
Yeah, very cool. And then your dear chief of staff went to Luxmore Casco.
Yeah.
And he was taught band by the greatest middle school band teacher that ever existed, which is my grandfather, Mr. Burr Joyce.
Oh, very cool.
Yes. Yes. And so we've known each other forever. So we'll go with that.
Clearly.
Yeah. So you represent the 2nd Congressional District, Madison and the surrounding area.
Yeah.
And I wanted to start kind of with this. I've heard the story of how you got into politics secondhand, and it's a powerful story. Would you share that with us?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not fair to say how I got into politics, because my dad was in city council and
campaigns
and all that. But I think how I got to, you know, kind of maybe running for office and doing more some out LGBT activism was, I was gay bashed leaving a bar. I called people the baseball bat, and I wasn't out. And at that point, I was kind of like, you know, this is not acceptable behavior for anyone to have to experience. And it really made me decide that it was important to be involved with LGBT activism more at that point. Because it just needed to be done, even though Wisconsin was the very first state in the country to have a gay and lesbian civil rights bill back in 1982.
No kidding.
And by the way, more legislation in 83 signed by a Republican governor, Lee Sherman Dreyfus, before this was all politicized. Wow. But, you know, it took 7 years after that 1982 legislation for the next state to do something, and that was Massachusetts. Jeez. But still, you know, having laws were one thing, but having the reality on the ground for people was another. And, you know, that certainly was something that made me become more of an activist, especially on the LGBT side.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, we've come a long way. We've got a long way to go yet. But I think it's, you know, with people like you, you know, fighting that fight for such a long time. And then talking with my brother, some of the history that I don't know of, you know, everything from Stonewall to today, you know, fighting the marriage equality fight and the equality fight in general has just been really remarkable. So yeah, that's awesome. So you ran for first, it was state assembly?
County board.
Oh, county board.
County board.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
and there's this other person on the county board at the time. What was her name?
Sammy
Baldwin.
Yeah. Hey, you've known her for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. Going back over 3 decades, on county board, did local government, and then wound up running for the state legislature since counties were kind of a product of the state, kind of organizationally.
Yep.
And then did 14 years in the legislature, including 6 years on the Joint Committee on Finance. I chaired that for 2 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, where you put your money is where you really put your values as a people, you know, so that was important. And then I wound up running for Congress, and now I'm on the Appropriations Committee doing some of the same sort of work, because, you know, where we invest tax dollars and prioritize people is what has the greatest impact on people's lives. And So, three decades now in local, state, and federal government, and still going strong.
Yeah. So what are you focusing on right now in appropriations and all that? What do you got your claws in right now?
Well, you know, this Congress is so incredibly broken by the Republican majority, because, you know, 19 votes to find a speaker, just, you know, setting a national record, it tells you volumes.
It's been funny.
We only got 27 bills done last year, the fewest since the Depression.
What?
Right? So it shows it's been an incredibly unproductive Congress. Our fiscal year ends September 30th.
Yes.
But they've only passed about half the bills in the House, and they haven't done any negotiating with the Senate. So we have to kick the can, so to speak, to keep funding government, a continuing resolution.
Yep.
They tried to do that this week, and they did some stuff to appease the more extreme members of their caucus, but that still wasn't enough. So they had to drop that bill. So hopefully by September 30th, in the next 2 weeks we're out here, we will not shut down the government, because that's the alternative if you don't at least have a continuing resolution. So that's something we're watching real closely through appropriations, and quite honestly, all of Congress, because this is something we all will wind up voting on.
And it's really like, you're there, but from a 30,000 foot view, it really is like the Marjorie Taylor Greens and Lauren Boberts and Matt Gaetzes of the world that are making this so difficult.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, part of what they did when Kevin McCarthy became speaker, he'll go down in history as, pathetic, I think is the word I would use, because he was so desperate to become speaker with a 5-seat majority in a caucus that makes the Adam Fitz family look pretty normal.
Yeah.
Changed a bunch of rules to empower the craziest people in his caucus.
Yeah.
And he put a bunch of those people on committees that are kind of like the A committees where we have to get stuff done, like appropriations. So he broke the appropriations committee for the first time, even during Trump's presidency.
What do you mean by that? What is that? He broke the committee.
He put people on that don't believe that you have to pass appropriation bills, which is like the one thing we have to do. Right. So we've been unable to function. And then the rules changes empower any one member can basically throw, a ratchet into the entire operations. And because we're living with those rules for Kevin McCarthy to become speaker, and he still got kicked out,
which even is hilarious.
Giveaways, exactly. we just can't function right now. So that's why, much of what we're looking at is, if we win the majority in November, we're only 4 seats down right now. We can get back to normal and function again, but this Congress has been historically bad.
So what rules did he change that empowered that made it so bad?
Sure. The main one, I think, is any one person can challenge the speaker, the vote, and they can have a vote on the floor. So if you even upset one person, they can then take a vote to the floor to make you not speaker, which is why we had 19 speaker votes to begin with. Right.
Right.
And their caucus, there's a lot of backstabbing going on.
Yes.
And, the speaker we have now is kind of, no one would have guessed a year ago that he ever would have been speaker, because they're kind of musical chairs game.
Who the hell was Mike Johnson, right?
Right. So it's been I can't wait till November. I want to hit the reset button. Maybe I'll hit the reset button with a spotted cow or something.
Yeah.
And then we'll hopefully get back to normal and functional.
And so when that happens, God willing, it happens in November, how does that change?
Sure. So when we would then be in the majority, we would appoint the majority of people on committees. So again, some of those people that were the problems on appropriations likely wouldn't have the seniority to stay on the Republican side.
That's
so
great.
We would change the rules so that any one person can't stop the entire operation, and along with some other rules that were difficult, and just function hopefully like we used to. I mean, part of the problem is we also didn't used to have Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert, but they will be marginalized with different rules. And they can huff and puff, but they can't blow the house down, at least. And that's what our goal is.
It's really horrible to see, the things that they believe, from, election denialism to conspiracy theories and all these things. And they have very powerful position. They shouldn't, but they have a lot of influence.
Well, not only do they have a lot of influence, largely because of the rules, again, that make it so they are as powerful as the speaker, really, in many ways, but they're the spokespeople for MAGA. They're the ones who Matt Gaetz was preparing Donald Trump for that amazing debate we had this week. I was just told by a Republican on the floor that's Matt Gaetz.
It was Matt Gaetz, really?
Yeah, that was his like debate prep.
Oh, that's delightful.
Exactly. Makes every bit of sense in the world.
It does.
But, you know, I think we are hopefully in a position in November to take the majority, and hopefully we can, you know, turn the ship back around like it needs to. But it's been a tough session.
What is that? How are the projections looking for November for Congress?
You know, fairly good. I mean, you know, we have a number of seats in Wisconsin. The 3rd congressional district, Ron Kind used to represent. Derek Van Orden currently does, the orneriest member of Congress.
Yes. Especially after a
few beers, right?
Yes, you know, right.
Pages to yell at, and librarians and Department of Defense officials and Democrats and Republicans and media. And he's kind of the quintessential Homer Simpson, you know.
That's right. Right.
And except Homer Simpson sitting in melt.
Simpson. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, except sitting in melt.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh.
And so that is a seat that Becca Cook can definitely win. And I think it's going to be a competitive race. The 1st district, Brian Stile, you know, he's never really been challenged. And we have an excellent challenger, Peter Barca, who used to be the Democratic leader in the assembly, was a member of Congress, was the Secretary of Revenue, was a small business administrator for the upper Midwest. I mean, he's got a resume that goes on and on.
Yeah, he's
and then
great.
In the 8th district, you know, in the Green Bay area, you know, Kristen Lyerly, an OBGYN, very, very strong candidate.
Dear friend of the show.
I'm sorry?
As a dear friend of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And, I know her well.
You know, she, think about it. You've got an OBGYN during the biggest, one of the biggest issues of the presidential campaign being, you know, reproductive freedom for women. And you got an OBGYN running against a guy who uses a dinosaur as the symbol for his business.
Yes.
Right? Like, what more do you
it's
need
great.
To
right.
explain the difference?
Yes. And well, and on all of his yard signs, it says Trump endorsed Tony Weed. So, for, you know, when he's referenced here, it's always Trump endorsed Tony Weed.
Yeah. I asked someone what it, because I didn't know who he was, because he's not exactly hit our radar screens. And I was up in Green Bay with Kristen doing a town hall on Project 2025. And I go, what's the guy's first name again? And people are like, Trump endorsed.
Yeah, that's basically it. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it's really remarkable. And we got about 10 seconds left. Well, how many seats do we need to flip?
Four.
That's it.
We want more, so we're not sitting there with a small margin, but just four nationally.
So it is doable.
Absolutely.
All right. We've got Mark Pocan here on the show, Congressman, 2nd District, and we're going to continue the discussion with him right after this. You know, we got rock music here for our rock star guest on the Rational Revolution. We got a fellow Mark, Congressman Mark Pocan. I'm Mark Becker. Glad you're here with us. And I wanted to kind of continue the discussion a little bit on, you know, how things are going and all of that. So you live in Madison. Our dear also friend of the show, Tammy Baldwin, she joined us in studio a couple times, maybe about a month ago. But do you guys like fly together and commute together and all of that stuff? Or how does that work?
Ironically, I see her more at the airport than I do in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
The Senate and the House, even though we're only a couple blocks apart, you're in your world and you don't see each other than the airport. I actually live in rural Dane County. I live in a town of Vermont in the western edge of Dane County, population 830 or something like
nice.
That.
Nice.
So, but Madison is obviously the biggest city in my district. And right. But, you know, Tammy, talk about a rock star. I mean, Tammy. Yeah. You know, is such an amazing U.S. Senator. She's a workhorse, not a show horse. You know, she doesn't,
yes.
you know, a TV camera come up and she doesn't knock over someone to get to it. She's busy, you know, negotiating deals with Republicans and Democrats to get things done. And she's got this amazing record. I mean, most recently, the Respect for Marriage Act, she got done with bipartisan support at a time that bipartisan things don't happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Affordable Care Act that in Project 2025, you know, they want to get rid of again and take away our protections, those pre-existing condition protections. A major part of that bill was keeping adult children onto policies till they're 26. That was Tammy Baldwin's provision. So anyone who his kid has health insurance because of that provision can thank Tammy Baldwin.
Yeah, I was really, when she was here, I was just, I never met her before, and I was blown away by just how genuine she was, you know, and yeah. how she is. It was really cool. And so when you're in town, come on in studio, we'll have the same thing.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Now, and I have to also say thank you because a couple of years ago, I took my son to DC and we wanted to get a tour of the Capitol. And I have my congressman's cell phone number, or former congressman, because I was the chairman of the Republican Party. But it's the darndest thing. If you're critical of them, they don't really like you very much. And so I wanted to get my son, who was in fifth grade at the time, I wanted to get him a tour of the Capitol. And, you know, they left me unread, which was cool. But my brother reached out to your team, and within like 2 hours, you made it happen. So thank you for that. That was
good. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad it worked out. I mean, you know, generally, your membership doesn't matter if you have a D or R, you know, after your name or who you're voting for. We should just get stuff done for you. But you know, I think the good things that we can do for people when they come out here are things like help them, you know, get some of the tours and tickets for things. And of course, in our district offices, you know, casework, I mean, you got a problem with Social Security, veterans benefits, IRS, you name it, we're all there to help you. You know, although I know Ron Johnson's office a little more likes to lecture you about spending, but the rest of us are there kind of to get things done when we can.
So. Oh, Ron and I go way back. So I want to talk about the debate. What did you think of the debate?
Well, you know, I actually had a couple moments of feeling bad for Donald Trump because, you know, the first debate was awful, right? I think we all know that. And it was
hard
sad
to watch.
And, you know, just across the board, that's the best, you know, that people could put out there. And Joe Biden got so much done in his first 2 years. Unfortunately, he became president very late in life and his aging was happening. And we saw that. But Donald Trump also was not liked by people, and he's still a major not party nominee. And we saw it in full force. I mean, the angriness, the random comments, the, you know, people eating dogs and cats, the concept of a health plan after 9 years, the calling Kamala Harris and her dad a Marxist, just, you know, the random stuff that, you know, on Thanksgiving, that old kind of drunken uncle sometimes says, you just kind of like, it's all right, go back to sleep.
Congressman Simpson.
Unfortunately, we were having that meltdown in front of all of us. And, you know, even Republicans in trying to justify it never have said he won the debate other than Donald Trump saying he did. They all say, oh, it was unfair. And they have all these excuses. But
they have the nerve to fact check.
Yeah, we saw what Donald Trump was. I mean, unfortunately, he doesn't have facts. He doesn't have values that connect with American people. And he has lots of crazy, crazy notions.
He does. The one thing that I think is hard for Democrats as we kind of move forward in the process is, even though it is a crazy uncle that's the top of the ticket, when you go to the grocery store, it's really expensive. And interest rates are expensive, and rent is expensive. And so how what's the plan for that?
Well, and Harris has been addressing this where Joe Biden didn't. And I think that was a mistake that Joe Biden had, is he was talking so much about the good things he did for the economy and getting us out of COVID. But, you know, worldwide, we have inflation and higher costs worldwide because we all came out of COVID at once, right? It's economic 101, right? Limited supply and lots of demand. Luckily, we addressed much of that with the Inflation Reduction Act that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden had, and that's helping reduce costs on healthcare, specifically prescription drugs for people on Medicare. We're negotiating for drug prices for the first time ever. We capped out-of-pocket expenses for seniors on drugs to $2,000. We capped insulin to $35, unfortunately only for people on Medicare because Republicans wouldn't let us go farther. And we did some things around energy costs. But, you know, housing is probably the toughest one right now. We need more housing stock to lower the cost. On food, it's doing what, quite honestly, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden have been doing with the Federal Trade Commission, going after big food. You know, there's four companies that control 60% of the food
distribution
in the country. Yeah. And they've been taking advantage of this. A lot of corporate greed. In fact, when you look, there's a graph out this week when Kamala Harris went after, you know, corporations for price gouging and doing this with food, all of a sudden there was a huge drop in online food prices because they were getting called out and they knew otherwise legislation could probably affect them somehow. And so that just all the more reinforced, you know, what is actually going on. But it has nothing to do with migrants at the border, as Donald Trump seems to bring everything to.
Right.
But it is real, and she is really addressing it, and she's really talking about it. And by doing so, just on food alone, we saw a big drop this week alone because of the administration being willing to go after those big companies that bluntly have been ripping us off.
And how, I mean, you know, Congress, the House of Representatives is the voice of the people, you know, mm-hmm. that's how it was set up. What is the House doing about that? Cause I mean, you know, the president is just one branch of the three.
Yeah. We're doing nothing about everything, right? Like, I mean, that's the problem, right? We're broken right now. And that's why more falls onto the executive branch. They can do at least some temporary things, but yeah. Federal Trade Commission is going after mergers. And that's one of the things, the more you have consolidation and fewer companies, the more they can have these price gouging efforts in on gasoline. This is something that got very little coverage, Mark, but there was an oil company that just sold to Exxon, and the head of that company was busted back in May by the Federal Trade Commission for hundreds of messages conspiring with OPEC, a foreign entity, on price fixing and supply fixing for gasoline. So the reason we're paying more for gasoline right now is because these companies are breaking the law in many ways to limit supply and keep prices artificially high. And it was because of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome. We're having an awesome discussion here with Congressman Mark Pocan. We're going to continue that on the other side.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train on us feeling near.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Mark Becker, hey, I'm your host. We got Congressman Mark Pocan here. And this is awesome, and I'm really thrilled that you're here, and I thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, of course. No, glad to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, and so we had Tammy Baldwin in studio. And I think one of the powerful moments from that interview was I asked her to tell the story of January 6th, what happened, and it was really moving. And I'd invite you to do that as well. I'd like to know, you know, your thoughts, because, you know, we're kind of talking about the rise of extremism and all of that, and it's something that is a concern to me. And so, yeah, tell what happened that day.
Sure. You know, it was interesting because there were seven states that they were going to go after our electors or our, you know, election results that day. And one of them was Wisconsin.
Yes.
So Nancy Pelosi, who was the leader at the time, had the Wisconsin Democrats, Ron Kind, Gwen Moore, and myself, going to lead the hour that they would have debated Wisconsin's election results. So we were honestly all in our offices preparing for that. Because it was during COVID, you could only have 10 members per party per house on the floor. Republicans didn't follow the rules, but that was the rules you're supposed to have. So a lot of members were in the gallery watching, but we were back preparing for that floor fight later that day. And we got notice of what happened. We were in lockdown. I was in the seventh floor of Longworth Building, which is the top floor. And we couldn't get out to do anything because they had us, you know, the building locked down and us in our rooms. I actually had another member from another building where they had some problems. They had to evacuate everyone out of Cannon. And then also in my office, Alan Lowenthal, who at the time represented a district in California, Long Beach area. It was, you know, the information I was getting was bluntly from TV. We had a couple of different networks on TVs, and that's where we were hearing and seeing what was happening, because that was the information that we could get. Being on the seventh floor, I could go out the window, and I was on the roof, and I did that, went to the front of the building, and I so wish I would have taken more pictures thinking, and I didn't at the time because it was a lot going on, that you know, people hadn't seen that angle, thousands of people on each side of the U.S. Capitol.
Oh, my God. That were surrounded. In, you know?
Yeah. So it was not just, you'd think, like one entrance, but it was literally on both sides of the building. And that was going on. And, you know, we had a lot of horror stories from people who were in the gallery, because when they cleared the floor off, it took another 45 minutes to get people, you know, out of the gallery. And that's when, you know, a lot of things were going on with people trying to break into the floor of the assembly. But for us, it was just getting information from TV, getting lots of contacts from people back home. Are you okay? You know, because they're watching. Right. I was watching. And then we were still preparing for if we were going to get back on the floor and they were going to challenge our state, how we would do that. So it was just a lot of chaos that day. And it was only exacerbated by Donald Trump being unwilling to put the law enforcement we needed to help, you know, quell things. Not only did he instigate it to have people come down, but then he also didn't stop the actions once they started.
Well, and then in the debate, he was asked what three times, he was pressed, would you do anything differently or do you regret? I don't know what the question was, but each time he passed it off. And, you know, I saw a news alert, I think it was yesterday. I didn't realize that it's going to be January 6th again when these results are going to be certified. So it's like, oh my God, how do we prevent that from happening again?
Well, one good thing I think is, you know, he's not in office right now. So
right.
You're not trying to pry someone from office. That won't happen. But we also know that he's already saying he's going to, you know, talking about getting charges removed for people who were charged on January 6th. And, you know, he's only gotten worse since he's left president the last 4 years. I mean, his rhetoric is so much more magnified than it was previously that, you know, I think anything could still happen, which is all the more reason I'm just hoping we have, you know, a little bigger perhaps victory in a few more states so that you're not at the point where you're having what could go on. Because don't forget, the House of Representatives will still be Republican controlled, even if it is by 4 seats, because we want to have placed, I think.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if new members will be in that point or not. I would really have to get more information. But a lot of members, don't forget how many voted then against those states that they voted against that day. So, you know, it still should be something of concern.
Yeah, and I have said this multiple times that he was a bumbling fool that made a lot of mistakes. He's still a bumbling fool, but now he's going to kind of, you know, sharpen that sword and not make those mistakes that he did last time. So it's
and they're ready on multiple fronts, right? Yeah. I mean, Project 2025 that he's mailing in Wisconsin, he has nothing to do with. 140 of his former administration employees, cabinet secretaries, ambassadors, and other appointees wrote Project 2025, right? Clearly, the Heritage Foundation is putting it out there. He's close to the Heritage Foundation. They sponsored the Republican convention. They had a whole day, training day on issues. Right. They are ready for, should they win, to do a lot of stuff that would be very bad and attack people's personal freedoms, have a huge power grab by the executive branch, and, you know, really impact this country in ways that I think people don't know.
And I saw something, too, you know, yesterday that the U.S. Postal Service said that there are some issues that they're having with mail-in ballots that, you know, are some serious problems, like taking people out of the voter rolls or whatever. What is that all about? What do we do about that?
I didn't see their exact statement, but there's a lot of things. I mean, part of the problem is RFK, you know, who also maybe isn't the most stable human being that runs for president, you know, because he got out so late, it was after deadlines that he's on the ballot. And now he's trying to change the rules. But, you know, ballots have to be mailed out in some places already because of early voting. And so this is causing problems, because if the amount of time to vote is changed, that's going to affect everything, including some of the mail processing. So, you know, lots to be concerned about. You know, that doesn't help that, you know, as much as they want to say there's cheating, you know, we know that there's very little in-person cheating that actually occurs. In fact, I got PolitiFacted on this once. I said you're more likely to get struck by lightning than commit in-person voter fraud. And it's true, one of the rare truths they put out there, because it literally is a higher chance to get struck by lightning. And But, you know, they tell you a whole different story.
So what do the next couple months look like for both, you know, the nation and then right here in Wisconsin?
It's a sprint, especially in a place like Wisconsin, right? I mean, I'm going to go around the state and do these Project 2025 town halls like we did in Green Bay last week. I'm doing one in Janesville on Saturday. I'm doing one in La Crosse for a group on Monday. But we're going to get around the state to talk about what this agenda really is, make sure people understand. They don't like what's in it when they know what's in it, but we have to make sure people are very clear on understanding what their roadmap is.
I'll say this right now too. If you want to do an entire episode on that, I would love to dedicate the entire thing, because I totally agree. People need to know what that is. So if we want to do that, 100%. Oh, I'd love
to.
Yeah, okay.
I'd love to. And if you want to take calls, I don't know how you do your program, but you know, whatever on it, I'd love to, because I think there's so much information we need to get out about it, because it is a huge power grab by the executive branch, by Donald Trump. He wants to fire 50,000 civil servants and put in political appointees to run the government. I mean, this is stuff that is directly out of third world, you know, banana republics that he's trying to do. It's going to surveil pregnancies. It's going to stop the ability for people to get birth control through the mail. It's going to, you know, labor is strongly affected. Get rid of overtime protections and pay. It's going to, the default option for people when you go to Medicare is going to be automatically to put you on a privatized program by default. So Medicare Advantage, and we get all kinds of complaints on that in my office from people who do take privatized Medicare. So there's a lot we could talk about, Mark, and I'd be glad to.
Yeah, great. Yeah. So in Wisconsin, I mean, new poll just came out. It looks good for both our dear friend Tammy Baldwin and also Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. What I'm nervous about is I remember this show playing this way in like 2016, where we're like, oh my gosh, and then you know, Hillary Clinton at the center in Philadelphia with the glass ceiling that did not break that night.
Yeah.
How do we ensure that doesn't happen this time?
I was just going to say, I'm going to put about a 5-foot asterisk on what you said, because it's all within the margin of error.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. So if Kamala Harris in this poll was up 52-48 and Tammy was up 5 points, that's all margin of error. And, you know, last time when Tammy ran, we know she's an exceptional candidate, but when someone can put 20 million of their own money on top of the Republican money to run a Senate race, it's awful hard.
I mean,
money does unfortunately speak volumes in elections and getting the message out. So, you know, this is a full effort. Politics cannot be a spectator sport for anyone who cares. You've got to do everything you can to knock on doors and make phone calls and talk to your friends and neighbors and be active, because we win when we get voters out. They agree with us on the issues, but if we don't get voters out, that's when we can be in trouble.
So what's the best way for people to do it?
I mean, you know, there's all kinds of groups, mainly, you know, of course, the Democratic Party, WISDEMS, it does a lot of the work themselves, but people just need to, you know, whoever they're backing, even if you're supporting a Republican, I mean, be active, because this is going to be a close election, right? Period. It's important for people to figure out how to work with a campaign or with a party to help get the effort out. And there are plenty of opportunities and plenty of candidates. And I want to especially say the state assembly and state Senate,
you
know, with fair maps for the first time in a lot of years, that also should be on everyone's radar screen, because it's not just the federal races, but it's the state races and even county races that really matter as well.
Yeah. It's so exciting to have like representative democracy in Wisconsin for the first time since 2010. It's very cool. Very cool. So fast forward to February, when hopefully all the dust is settled and the right things happen. The country is so divided. Extremism is so high. Conspiracy theories abound. How do we get past all of this?
I'll tell you, this is just strictly from my gut on this. And I've done this, you know, for 3 decades now. Is when Donald Trump is out of the picture, I do think the fact that we are such a celebrity driven society and entertainment, that Celebrity Apprentice made him someone that he never should have been. And we judge him more as an entertainer than as a statesman. And therefore he's done all these things that have been outside the norms and the really the moral compass of how we operate. If he's out of the picture, there is no one else like him right now. There's no one else who has that. You know, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, go down the list. No one else is going to have that kind of gravitas to do this. And I'm hoping that there'll be people in the Republican Party who want to take their party back. And, you know, I'm fine with having differences on opinion, on policy, but at the end of the day, we all got to move the country forward. And that doesn't happen right now with MAGA. So we just have to stop that.
I get nervous that, you know, it will be either a Marjorie Taylor Greene or, you know, someone who has a Trump last name who's like, oh, we're going to continue the legacy of,
Now, I really believe the power of celebrity is something that Donald Trump had and was unique. Yeah. And when he's out of the picture, that will move us forward.
So, and yeah, because I mean, it's interesting when you have Dick freaking Cheney. It takes someone like that. I wish George W. Bush would do the same thing.
Well, you know, in Green Bay, Reed Ribble was always a good friend, a real conservative, but honorable and wanted to get things done and move the country forward. And, you know, he looks at this election, if you follow his social media, with, you know, some contempt, rightfully so, because he sees what's happening is not in the best interest of the country. And, you know, I think there are good people like him and Tom Petro. In fact, right now, Reed and I are leading this Democracy First effort, just asking every candidate to agree to abide by the election results.
That's great.
And, you know, we're trying to make things work for Wisconsin.
Yeah, Reed's a wonderful guy and a good friend. When I got into politics, he was someone that I got to know really well. And yeah, Reed's great. We got about 10 seconds left. I'm totally serious. Let's set that up with Project 2025.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic. Mark Pocan, Congressman, thank you so much for your time. This was awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
We'll talk
great.
To you when we appreciate set that up. We'll do that.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Take care.
You got it. We got Rational Revolution. We'll be back after this.
Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free.
I want a revolution. That's why we're here, right? That's why we're here. My gosh, what an awesome time with Congressman Mark Pocan. You know, I'm kind of like nerding out a little bit, got to be honest, because that was so cool. Thank you, Mr. Congressman, for your time and for your brilliance. That was amazing. I could have talked to him for another 2-3 hours. That was cool. And that was a real pleasure to do. And so this is my producer, Amanda, said this is Mark's musings. And so this is, I guess, what the segment has turned into. And I want to talk, you know, so the last, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it's been, has been like doom and gloom. Oh, my goodness, the school shooting and the bulletproof backpacks, blah, blah, blah. Not today, my friends. We're not going to do that today because I'm going to talk about... I'm going to give you some encouragement to be like Nike and just do it. Live and do. No, I'm not going to go all live, laugh, love on you guys. I'm not doing that because Lord knows that's not me. But I'm going to tell you just a little bit of a story. In my career, I get like one day off a week other than Sundays. I own a business, and so Wednesdays are my day off. And my wife said earlier this week that she wanted to take our son out of school on my day off because it might be the last really nice day where we get to like, you know, run around in shorts and a t-shirt and just have fun and play and be together as a family. And oh my God, did we ever. It was awesome. Lately, my business and my life has been just absolutely like crazy stressful. You know, I look at like, so every week my phone kind of yells at me and it'll say, hey, here's your phone usage. You want to see it, loser? You know, and they give you this report of how much screen time you have. And I'm like, I hold my nose and I open it up and I'm like, oh God, let's see it. And Wednesdays, I think I said is my day off. And so I see on my phone screen that it's like, you know, a couple hours here, 3 hours. And then Wednesday is like 8 hours of phone usage. So never is like, me being off. It's I'm just working from home and working on my phone. And that's not cool because, you know, I on Sundays we have like no tablet Sundays and I try to shut my phone off. I put it on vibrate and I try not to be as available at all because I want to be there with my family. You know, and I haven't been as productive and as present of a dad as I should have been and I should be, you know. And I try to justify that by saying, oh, I'm doing this for them, you know? Cause I mean, it is true, but you know, years down the road, my kids are not going to remember that. When I'm gone, they're not going to remember, oh, dad worked so hard and he did it all for us. What they're going to remember is where I was physically and mentally. I mean, I could be there physically, but if I'm not there, I'm paying attention to something else. I'm not there. And what they're going to remember is they're going to remember, hey, you know what? Dad picked me up from school every day and dad was at my baseball games and dad was always there to tell me that I am loved because I do love them. And of course my wife, but that's so important. And so we kind of did this thing where it was on a Wednesday. It was my day off. And my wife was like, you know what? Let's take our son out of school and let's have a family day. And so I it was Wednesday and you know, Ben was waking up. He's in first grade, which is like exponentially harder than kindergarten, you know. It's, oh my gosh, the change for him. There's homework. Anyway, you know, we're getting him ready and I'm making him his breakfast and I kind of stopped and I was like, dude, what if I called the school and said, you're going to be with us today? And what if we had just had a fun family day? We went to a park and got some lunch and his eyes got as big as saucers. And he was like, what? And I said, yeah, let's do that. What if we just had a fun day? And the smile was like bigger than his face and his eyes got all squinty because that's what happens when he smiles. And he's like, let's do it, Dad. Let's do it. And we did. And we went to the Titletown Park, which was wonderful. If you guys ever come to Green Bay, I really recommend that park. We laughed and ran around and had contests on the 40-yard dash and slid down the slides and just we just were together as a family. Then we went to 1919 because they wanted to see the 30-foot-tall Super Bowl trophy. And then we went to the Bay Beach Wildlife Sanctuary and fed the geese out of their hands, nonetheless. And then there was one that would like let them pet it, and it was actually like a super nice goose. So, but the whole point is, and then I can't forget this, guys. We're a huge Red Sox family. We love the Boston Red Sox, and we finished the day watching the Red Sox have a walk-off win to stay alive in the wild card race. It was like the best day. It was incredible. And my phone, I can't wait to see that report because it's going to show that, yeah, I mean, I was on it, of course, for a little bit, but not anywhere near what I was. And it was amazing for my children and my wife. And it was amazing for me because I went to work the next day, rejuvenated and exercised, you know, like energized to take on whatever, because I know we're going to be fine. But I want you all to do that too. Like, do it. Do if you feel you need a personal day, take it. If you need a family day, take it, because you know life goes by so quickly, it's so fast, and the time that you have with the people that you love is so short, and it means so much. So that is Mark's musings for today, is whatever you need and whatever you need to give to the people who need it, do it. Do it. Take the vacation. Take the time. Breathe. It's, you know, live, laugh, love, sure, whatever. I guess if that's what you want to do, do it because it is so important for you, for your family, and for your health. And that's Mark's musings here on the Rational Revolution. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you again, Congressman Mark Pocan. We will see you next week. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can